This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Oliver Mitchell. Oliver's with FF Venture Capital, but he's also a frontier tech inventor, manager, and VC investor. Sort of a fascinating background. Oliver, can you take a moment and maybe tell us a little bit about yourself, your partner at FF Venture Capital, and just a little bit about your background and what frontier tech is and so forth?
My pleasure. Thank you so much for the kind intro. You know, I really have two parts of my background. One is a startup founder where I built companies and exited them by selling them to very large multinational organizations and integrated them post-merger and to execute on the mission of those acquisitions. And then the other is in private equity, where I've really sat in every seat around the table, whether in family office, my own portfolio of investments, where I had about a dozen companies. Eight of them have since exited, including two IPOs and two unicorns. And today I'm a venture partner at FFVC. We have about $200+ million of under management. We're generalist investors, but I focus a lot of my time, as you said, on frontier tech. So what that is robotics, remote sensing and drones, machine learning technologies, augmented and virtual reality, and smart mobility like autonomous vehicles and other, unmanned systems.
So really fascinating. And take a moment and tell us, you know, it's just that there's so many different things. There's an explosion of technology, explosion of software, explosion of everything, it seems like. When you look at all of it, how do you keep your eyes on it, and what are you most excited about this year?
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of explosions. So I would say that, you know, there's, you know, this year, what we've seen with the pandemic and post-pandemic, which we seem to be still in the middle of, we've seen the exacerbation of the push towards automation, especially in areas of shipping and logistics, where people have moved away from brick and mortar and buying online and online services. And so in order to fulfill those orders, you know, they go beyond the human capacity to do them the next day. And so there's been huge investments in automating distribution centers and warehouses. And that extends from, you know, depalletizing large, you know, cartons to pick and place, you know, select items within a box or carton that's being shipped out, to eventually autonomous trucks and autonomous vehicles on the roads and delivering them in sort of long haul shipping, not in sort of around the urban areas, but sort of long haul shipping in sort of, you know, wagon training, you know, different trucks together and what have you. And this started really in 2012 in earnest when Amazon bought Kiva Systems for about $775 million and replacing, you know, their warehouse picker cart where they used to push for like three football fields in length with robots, the Kiva systems that were able to bring the shelving to the picker. And so they would be in a station and the shelving would autonomously go to the picker and they would take the items and then box them and label them and put them, you know, on a truck and you'd get them the next day or in 2 days. And so, you know, that push started in 2012 and it has only gotten, you know, greater. And so it's definitely shipping logistics. Another area, obviously, is healthcare.
Let me just ask you about one question there real quick, yeah. And then we'll come to healthcare. This combination of the technology getting better and better and labor being shorter and shorter really makes this an ideal time to push forward on some of those things, doesn't it?
Yes. And so whenever you have that is really the perfect storm, you know, in areas where you have labor shortages and high demands, that's where the push towards automation hits, you know, its highest peaks and really goes across the threshold. And so let's hold off in healthcare. That's actually a good idea for the time being in our discussion. And let's go to the next area, construction, you know, and agriculture. So there's been before the pandemic, there was big investments in prop tech technologies. And we're only seeing that even though that there's still a lot of office vacancies, you know, with the home building binge going on, with the idea of more remote sensing to be able to monitor pedestrian and vehicular traffic around, you know, properties, we're seeing a greater push for automation within PropTech and in construction workflow as well, to get all the stakeholders around. So, you know, a couple, you know, portfolio examples. One, in the shipping logistics space, we have Plus One Robotics, which augments human labor in sorting packages. And in the sort of construction workflow space, we have Civ Robotics, which does autonomous surveying. And they start off in drones, and the drone would autonomously stake, you know, large horizontal construction projects like pipelines and roadways. And now they also have terrestrial robots that that do that as well, and even quicker than the drones. And all those stakes and all that they do connects to the cloud. And so as building plans and as construction plans change, it's autonomously updated to all the stakeholders as well. And then the final area I would say that's really exciting, and where you're having a very large push towards automation, is in agriculture, where once again, as you astutely point out, we have these labor shortages in sort of picking and harvesting in agriculture, and you have high demands, and we saw that during the pandemic, and it's only increasing as our population's increased. And so, you know, you're having, you know, there are a lot of companies out there that are going into autonomous harvesters, going to other areas around the workflow. For example, we have a company called Burrow, which is basically an autonomous wheelbarrow. And they right now work in the table grape industry in California. And, you know, those vineyards are extremely, you know, they're like a few football fields in length. And so rather than people going with, you know, full bins, getting an empty bin, going back and down the roads, the Burrow robot goes autonomously up and down the road so people can put the full bin of grapes on the robot above and then pull out an empty bin so they can continue, once again, being at their station, sort of like that Kiva robot, you know, and just stay at their station and continue picking. So I would say, you know, logistics, construction, and agriculture, those areas where you have sort of the labor shortages and bottlenecks, where automation is getting the highest traction.
I mean, absolutely fascinating. And just for a moment, I mean, you've had such a wealth of experience and some of which I understand more closely than others, like, you know, serving as leader of the tech committee at UJA and stuff like that, but a discussion for a different time. But Oliver, tell us a little bit, what advice do you give to founders? Because you've been a founder, you've been an investor, and I really want to ask you just for a moment, advice for founders and then advice for investors. Because you've built out of your own entrepreneurial efforts, then have become the venture capital investor, which is what so many entrepreneurs, you know, that would be the dream. That's what so many of them want to do, but so many have a very hard time converting that from one to the next. But take a moment on what advice would you have for founders and any advice you would have for investors.
Sure. And just to touch on that, UJ, you know, ultimately what we want to do with technologies is improve, you know, the quality of life of our citizenry. And so UJA is a great organization that helps out 100 different nonprofit beneficiary organizations, in food pantries, to social services, to education, to, you know, to providing the most needy services across the globe. And I could speak at great length to that. But ultimately, you know, the investments that I make, you know, come from passion. And so I think that the founders, you know, they have to do something that they're passionate about. I work at a number of accelerators like EFL at NYU Stern and Ibonexus in San Mateo. And sometimes you'll get, you know, some founders who are like, you know, I studied this in my Harvard Business School and I got all the data and this and that. And they're not passionate about, you know, the industry. They just got all the data that this could be a good idea. And usually, you know, that's not a good place to start. I personally like frustrated founders. I like founders that have deep domain expertise that say, you know what, you know, in the case of Burrow, I grew up on a family farm and I knew, you know, Charlie Anderson, I knew, you know, the problems with hiring labor and the bottlenecks in harvesting, you know, crops to bring them to market. And that's why I created Burrow. And so I really like frustrated founders that are really committed to putting forth an idea that really revolutionizes that industry. And I think, you know, first and foremost is, you know, you get, ultimately, you know, we talk a lot about technology, but ultimately it comes down to people. It takes a lot of people to make a great company. And so you got to really find great partners. That's internally, you know, I think that, you know, an inventor should partner up with a business founder. You know, a business guy should partner up with a technologist and a marketer and really to build a team and around that team, a great culture and a great organization. And then you can attract great people and you can really build a great company. And then, you know, the product really has to be something that it really differentiates itself in the marketplace, you know, with, you know, proven intellectual property that is novel and unique, that it potentially could be patented or is light years ahead of the competition, and that there's high demand for. You know, you can't just, you know, go into a basement, design something and say, here I go, don't you love what I designed? And they're like, well, you know, you're charging $500, but you could buy something very similar for $50 and it does 80% of what you're offering. And we've seen that before, whether with Jibo, you know, Alexa killed Jibo, you know, and we've seen that before where that companies, you know, did these fantastic designs and they, their cost and what they were doing was so far, you know, behind the market with the affordability and with the need. And lastly, but, you know, that go on. I'm sorry.
No, but your point about it and I love your thought process originally about, is it someone who's really passionate about the area or is it just someone who's trying to make a lot of bucks but doesn't really necessarily have passion about an area and know an area? So somebody really have domain expertise. And then your this point about, you know, the market's got to actually want it. I mean, sometimes there are people that are ahead of the market and can figure out what the market wants, but you ultimately need something that really does fit a need, that's really wanted, not just a brilliant invention. I mean, I've seen over the course of my career, brilliant lawyers, but that can't really serve clients, and they're very different things. And the same thing with a product, it's something that really fits a purpose and a need.
Absolutely. I think if you're too far ahead of the parade, you're not on the parade. Now, of course, there are people on the periphery that are great revolutionary inventors, Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, but you know, they're an anomaly. And so if you're going to build a business, you really need to have customers and you need to have market demand. And it really has to be something that's mission critical to the business. Often in robotics, you know, people will market that what they're offering, you know, saves money, saves labor. It will reduce labor. You know, like a robot can work 24/7, doesn't need healthcare, et cetera, et cetera. But they don't market how much more money the company's going to make, you know, how they're going to increase the revenues. Now, I always say the two companies is it's a bad value proposition. Yes, there'll be cost savings. That's a given. But if you really want to hook, you got to tie your business to their business. And that you got to show them by them employing these technologies, they're going to increase the revenues by 10x because you're going to do it better, faster, and cheaper.
Right, that there's actually a value creating, not just cost reducing, that there's growth in it as well. It's a bigger and easier long-term value sell and stuff like that, because everybody needs revenues and revenue growth.
Exactly, exactly.
And when you look at things as an investor, I mean, how's that perspective for you differ than your view as a founder? How do you look at things as an investor today and what advice for investors?
Yeah. You know, I think that if you're getting a call saying that we're oversubscribed, we need you, you know, we got this hot company and, you know, they're the new flavor of the month. I'm the type of person that, you know, wishes them a lot of luck, but that's just not how I invest. You know, I try to take a very pensive, exhaustive look at doing due diligence and really digging into what the investment is doing. And so I think that there's a lot of investors out there that get caught up in the FOMO, get caught up in the hype, and just, you know, deploying capital, you know, they're sort of, you know, spraying and playing, as they say, like a dog in the park, right? And they're not really being thoughtful. And so I'm a person that really believes in quality over quantity, but there's definitely, you know, an argument to be made that in quantity, you know, by throwing enough darts at the dartboard, one of them is going to hit, you know, near bullseye. So there's an argument to be made that that's just not how I invest.
But you got to have a lot of money to play that game, don't you?
Yeah. And you see that, you know, in the seed space where people raise small funds and they'll basically build a resume building fund type of thing around that strategy and stuff like that. But yeah, it's not a way that, you know, you can really bring in limited partners where they're going to make money off those deals.
Fantastic. And you, FF Venture Capital, built this great set of funds. Congratulations. I want to thank you for taking the time to visit with us on the Becker Private Equity Podcast today and to talk about your career and what you've done. Really, simply remarkable. Oliver, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you. And Scott, take care and stay safe out there.